You're listening to American Girl Women with Laura Treader and Lindsay Adams-Franca. This is a podcast where two millennial gals gather around the microphone and reminisce on the cultural phenomenon that took our childhood by storm, American Girl dolls. Contrary to what you might think, we aren't just talking about dolls here. We're diving into the high highs and the low lows of getting hooked on American Girl and all the childhood memories that come flooding back. So join us and a few special guests each week as we become American Girl women.
Today on American Girl Women, we're thrilled to welcome Casey Highsmith and Justine Orlovsky-Schnitzler, editors of the newly released An American Girl Anthology, Finding Ourselves in the Pleasant Company Universe. This introspective and deeply thoughtful collection of essays dives into the cultural impact, nostalgia, and deeper meanings behind the American Girl brand. It is a must-read for fans at any level. We are so honored to connect today and hear all about their new book. Justine and Casey, welcome to AGW.
We're thrilled to be here. Thank you for having us.
We are so excited to have both of you on, and we've been looking forward to this for such a long time and have loved getting to preview into your anthology. We just can't wait to break it down with you today.
We are so, so excited to connect and discuss your book, An American Girl Anthology. It truly is such a fascinating and really layered collection of essays about the different connections to identity and cultural significance within the world of American Girl. And it's such a sharp examination of this brand that I think we all really connected to growing up, and I don't think had any idea that we could connect in such a thoughtful and critical way so many years later. I think it's really just such a testament to the brand and what it meant to us and who it shaped us out to be. We're really just so honored to have you here today and to connect more with you both. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. What sweet words.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. But before we dive into the book, we would love to hear a little bit more about your background with American Girl. Casey, would you be able to walk us through your experience with the brand?
Sure. So normally when we talk about this, Justine goes first, and it has this really funny cadence because she says all her wonderful things about her doll, which I won't steal the thunder there. And then I follow up with, I never had a doll. So my family couldn't afford any of the dolls growing up, but they were very big in, you know, in my school, in all of my girl groups and my friendships, mm-hmm. Girl Scouts and things like that. And this was like, I think a little bit before maybe my town was not into the rent-a-doll situation that a lot of libraries had. So right. All my experiences were with other people's dolls, but we had lots of parties with them. I remember distinctly going to other friends' birthday parties, and I didn't have any of the merch or the doll, but my mom found her frilliest nightgown and put me in that and did my hair with ribbons and did the best we could. And then it was always some kind of potluck, like make a dish from one of the American Girl cookbooks. And that is where I shined. So I could but never had, I don't think I owned a single American Girl doll thing until I was a grown up, but nonetheless still felt very connected to the entire universe.
I love that so much. That just really is a testament to how prevalent it was in the culture, even without directly engaging with it, having it.
Absolutely. And I don't think I'm unique in that. I think for everyone who had a doll, I think there's just as many folks who didn't. Or maybe they had access to the books, which was my big interaction with them, was reading all the books, the long shelf at the library of all the books. So yeah, I think it's a pretty prevalent situation. Definitely still part of this larger universe.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Justine? What was your American Girl experience growing up?
Gosh, I had a few. So Molly was my doll, still is. She's at my parents' house. She's in very good condition because she was probably the best gift I ever got. And although I played with her and I loved taking her out and having adventures with her, it was also very impressed upon me that she was very special and very valuable, and I treated her with respect. It was a great lesson. I think I got her in 2002, I want to say. I was about 7. She's very solid. And so they've changed the make of the dolls a little bit such that 6 years later, my sister gets a doll She's younger than me. The doll's very floppy. She's made very differently. It feels like they don't hold up the
Oh,
same way. And it's
interesting.
well, over the course of doing research for the book, which I'm sure we'll get into, I learned that there have been different makes and molds and materials that they have used. So Molly's a solid gal. She's hanging on strong. She's old enough to drink now, so she looks great. And she's the cover of the book. So super zoomed in. That doll face on the cover is
Yes.
Molly.
Wait, that's your actual Molly?
Yeah, we got a picture taken of her.
Wow.
She went to her little portrait session. It was very
Then had
sweet.
some touch-ups with
Yes, exactly.
the photo. She has been shopped a bit.
She had a little bit of dirt in her teeth, and that's okay. But getting her was really special. My grandmother bought her for me, and the morning that I got Molly, it was Christmas at my aunt and uncle's house, and I was violently ill. This was a morning that I was throwing up all over the place, and my dad walked me upstairs to the guest bathroom, and I saw under the tree that there was Kit's bed. So we mixed and matched a little bit, and I thought, does that mean I'm getting a doll? It must be, right? Like, that's gonna happen. And I was like so excited, I couldn't go back to sleep. Also, the stomach bug or whatever I had going on, very memorable morning. I had Molly, I loved her, I still love her. So yeah, that's it's been a really wonderful thing to kind of come back to as an adult in a totally new way.
Incredible. That's so awesome. And did you say your Molly is at your parents' house or with you currently?
She's at my parents' house, yeah, along with my wedding dress, you know, all the really like weighty, sentimental things in my life. Yeah, she's still hanging out there, along with my sister's doll, who I asked her if she had a name. It was like a she's like a looks like me doll.
Yeah.
Or the I guess they rebranded. I don't know if that's the Be Forever, whatever they're called now. And my sister said, I don't think I ever named her. So unfortunately, she remains nameless, but the two of them are there together.
Oh
Best
my
friends forever.
gosh,
Yeah.
Molly and
Incredible.
what's her name?
She who must not be named because she
Yeah.
doesn't have one.
Right. She who was not.
Fair
Clearly.
enough.
Yeah.
I never name my bitty baby and think about that
Oh,
quite
yeah.
often. Or maybe it was like an interchangeable name.
Yeah.
Justine, what was your path with American Girl and doll adoration like? Did you phase out of it at a certain point?
So it's interesting, and I'll tie this to the book because that's what we're here to do. But there's
Yeah.
a wonderful essay where one of our writers talks about how being interested in American Girl kind of led her to public history and being a historian, and how there's like this Felicity generation. I definitely felt like I was a Titanic kid, I was an American Girl kid, I had my special interest, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, you name it, all the things that so many of us are end up finding out later on that we were all kind of interested in for reasons we couldn't articulate. So I really carried the love of history, I think, from that forward. But I will say I don't think I was playing with Molly after middle school. You know, there's definitely that weird transitionary puberty moment where some people stop being interested in it and they try to make you feel like you should stop being interested in it. But I never wanted to get rid of her. I never wanted to let go of any of the stuff. But I remember very distinctly when they came out with Rebecca Rubin. And I thought, man, if she had come out like 6 years ago, that would have been my doll. I wanted a Jewish American doll. I had a little menorah that was child sized, not doll sized, but I was using that for Molly. My Molly, of course, was Jewish because I was. Yeah, it was always around and it was always in the back of my mind. I guess I kept up with it. Like my mom would share catalogs that she was still getting and say, oh my gosh, look at what they're making now. And I do remember my mom calling me when they came out with like a 60s doll. She's like, this makes me feel so old. You cannot have this stuff as accessories.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean,
Oh my God,
yeah, getting
Julie.
to, I know. And the bathroom, oh my gosh, I was at
Oh
an
man,
American
her.
place. I know. I was literally there like a week ago and they had her little bathroom set up. And I was like, wow, I would do that now for my own bathroom.
Her
So.
collection is so fun and totally hear you on Rebecca. I had Felicity growing up and I had like minimal accoutrement to my Felicity. I had her birthday outfit and a Girl of Today nightgown for her. I was really focused in on the books and that's where I had a very expansive collection, but my doll collection was just with Felicity and Bitty Baby, but my mom came on the podcast. Laura and I both interviewed our moms a few years ago, and my mom, similar to yours, Justine, kept tabs on American Girl and where my interest certainly waned. She would still get the catalog and just see what they were doing. And when Rebecca came out, what did my mom say, Laura? She was like, Oh, you would have had that entire collection, like every last
Yes.
thing. Like,
Yes. Well, and we both asked our moms. I don't remember what my mom's answer was, maybe Samantha, but I know your mom's answer, Lindsay, like to the question we asked them, which was like if they could have any American Girl doll, because obviously it didn't exist when they were growing up, who would they have? And your mom unequivocally said Rebecca, like she had been following Rebecca on her own accord and free will. She had
Oh,
been
yeah. She
tuned
bought the
into Rebecca.
books.
Yeah, she brought the books. That's right. And I don't blame her because I had a similar like phenomenon to like what one of the essays talks about, like, and Justine, like what you were just basically zeroing in on is that you do sort of hit that point where people are putting away their dolls, and it's like you have to decide like when you're ready to do that. If you are ready, it's like a pressureful moment. But I remember Rebecca coming out after I had felt obligated by society to put my dolls away and being like, I want her. There's just something about her that was so fun and interesting. If she had come out years earlier, I absolutely would have gone in on Rebecca. But Molly is a great doll as well, and I love that you just ascribed your own identity onto her because, as we also learn from the essays, you can absolutely do that if you want to.
Definitely can. You can have again a small, like a child-sized menorah that in compared to a doll is still very large. And
Yeah,
this is your Hanukkah
absolutely.
setup.
I really love that, and I wish I considered that growing up. Before we dive more into the book, I would love to learn a little bit more about your history together, Casey and Justine, and how you two met.
Oh my gosh. Casey, I
Yeah.
want you to take the bulk of this, but I will start off by saying that I zeroed in on Casey and I was like, I'm gonna be her friend. And now we're co-editors, so it obviously worked, but it was deliberate on my part.
Love at first sight. We come from the same department, the Department of American Studies and Folklore at the University of North Carolina. And we actually didn't study anything the same. And there's, of course, overlap a little bit in some of the core classes and some of the professors, but we studied very different things. My main area of study is actually food and food history. And Justine is Jewish studies, but we found each other. And one of our mentors is also someone I think who kind of tethered us together. I don't know what she saw in the long vision of like these two are going to put something together. And she's actually moderating our very first book talk, which I think is going to be just a, you know, a, basically, I feel like I'm going to cry the entire time. Happy tears, of course. But yeah, we've been together through that and we just kind of stuck together. And then Justine had this great idea and was like, would you like to work on this with me? And now we're here.
Oh my gosh, so wonderful. The connection to food makes just knowing that background makes a lot of sense about the eating breakfast like it's 1774
Right?
essay. It lends a new level of context to that as well.
At what point did you two discover your shared love for American Girl? How did that come up in conversation?
I honestly feel like we didn't have a conversation about it until I had already like frantically left you a voicemail at the American Folklore Society conference that I was at, and I said, hey, I gave a presentation about American Girl doll memes and Helicity Merryman and how a lot of us are recontextualizing our childhoods and awkward teenage years and adolescence and now adulthood, like through memes. Casey has had phenomenal editing and writing experience. She's got other books. You should check them out. And I just thought, you know, it's like proposing marriage, right? Let's do a book together. You'll
Book
have to
marriage.
hang out with me for the next couple of
You
years. And I
know.
was thrilled that Casey did have an interest in it, especially thinking about the American Girl cookbooks. Like it all just kind of snowballed in the best way, I
And I
think.
think something that connects us too in our training and then in our academic training, but also just in our research interests, despite how seemingly different they might be on paper, is that we were both trained in material culture studies, which is really the study of all the little objects, right, and what they mean, which what is a better example of that than a doll and all her accessories and all the books and all the things that you can buy with her. And then the other thing we both study is women and gender studies. And so I think those two were really where we kind of really found our intersections and realized that we had so much to talk about this book, despite our different backgrounds and the different backgrounds we have with the dolls and the universe as well. And I think that really shines through with all of our contributors too, because you find each of them has a similar, but maybe wildly different at the same time, story about their relationship with American Girl. And I think that really comes through in the essays that are really well written and very well researched, but then very deeply emotional at the same time.
I have to ask because I feel like there's been this cultural phenomenon with women of our generation really tapping back into American Girl. I mean, that's pretty much why we are all sitting here today, right? Because I think that this community maybe didn't exist, or this level of like nostalgia for this brand and analyzing its impact on our culture, wasn't happening until recent years. How do you guys feel about this like momentum that the brand has had with people revisiting it? And of course, like there are collectors and people who have been passionate about it for years. Maybe they never dropped off of American Girl. But I think what Lindsay and I identify with the most and what we're most curious with engaging with our listeners is people who maybe don't have their dolls anymore. Maybe they don't have children yet that they're sharing their love of dolls with, but they themselves are drawn to revisit this part of their past. What do you all make of, our inclination to be doing that at this time in the culture?
I think that is certainly what made me want to write an essay and present about American Girl at the American Folklore Conference in 2022, which is kind of how this whole thing got started. It was kind of a joke to start, and by that I don't mean that it was an unserious topic, but rather that I was approaching it with humor and that kind of levity. I thought, well, this will be fun. What if American Girl doll memes are actually folklore and we're writing this in real time? Like, this is a cultural touchstone that so many of us have. And it's not just the dolls, it's also like the care and keeping of you. I mean, I don't know a single person like who grew up, expecting to menstruate that didn't have that book. That is a really
Right.
incredible common thread. So I don't know. It was kind of wild. I gave the presentation and I thought maybe five people will show up, but it was a packed room and everybody had a comment or a story or a connection. And so I don't know. I mean, I think you could certainly speculate wildly and go bigger and say, in very uncertain times, it's comforting to return to parts of your childhood. But I don't think that it's locked in the past that way. And I think that's what you're getting at. I think that there is this ongoing engagement where you can really see yourself still, like in the brand and through the brand. So with Helicity Merriman and, any of these kind of meme accounts where it says, I need an American Girl doll who does X, you can put in there. I saw one early on that was like, eat cheese out of the bag with your hands. And I was like, yeah, that's me. Sure. People love, yeah, they like to see themselves in things and I tagging yourself, etc. There, maybe it's millennial. Maybe we'll find out later on that this is really like a generational thing and there's going to be some kind of hard end to it. But I don't know. I mean, Casey, you've said this, your eldest is not a doll kid, but like knows about American Girl. It's still very much there and out there.
Yeah, my eldest Avery is not a doll kid, and not for lack of me trying to push. I'll be honest, I signed up for the American Girl doll catalog as soon as I knew I was pregnant with my first kid.
Hell
But I had
yeah.
a plan. But I just kept reading the catalog, and we love looking at the catalog still because they're always really fun and I have all the accessories. But my kid was never a doll kid of any kind. But nonetheless, they talk about them in school. They do talk about the books. The books are in their library. I've been in the school library. I've been in, the public library too, still has them. It is a really interesting thing to see these more contemporary generations still engage with them in various ways, maybe not the exact same way. And I do think for a large portion, Gen Z is also fairly enamored of the universe in their own way. So I do think it's already expanded beyond millennial. And then a little bit of Gen X, just because, the earliest stage of the dolls were from that era. I think one scholar has told me, not to get too freaking nerdy here, but one of the things that we study in our field and have for generations is quilts and the meaning of quilts, both as material culture objects, as historical objects, as objects of women's history and communication. You can unravel it in a thousand different ways. But someone said to me, this seems like it's the next quilt. This is a 21st century
Wow.
quilt, and or I guess end of 20th century, beginning of 21st century quilts, in that it's something everyone knows. There's a lot of hidden messaging. There's a lot of insider knowledge that a lot of people know, but you don't necessarily need that to come to the universe. There's a lot of analogous information you can put there, but at the root of it, it's just this material culture that is shared through generations, largely by women or by other marginalized communities that are brought in by women, and it just keeps going. So I thought that was really, honestly, like super important for our field to be compared to quilts,
Yes.
but also just
Yeah.
useful. Like it's, I think it has a point there too.
Right. That's really impactful. I think it's so easy to maybe as an outsider deduce American Girl as a doll brand, not fully understand the meaning behind it and how it truly shaped so many of our formative years in the various touch points of the brand and how you were interacting with it, how you were learning to be a girl within culture and just your identity. And I think it expands so much beyond what might be seen at first sight. And I think we see this sentiment with Justine, you mentioning this on the podcast and throughout the book. There were several contributors that alluded to it, but the Felicity generation, like how American Girl sparked early interest for people's careers. That is so important. And it goes so much beyond just nostalgia, right? It's formative.
It's formative. And so I think too, like that element of it, and then their publishing arm generally, right? So the books are accessible to a lot more kids because they're going to be in public libraries or they're going to be in your school library. The Care and Keeping of You, of course, is this massive juggernaut. It's still a juggernaut. It is still how a lot of parents approach these conversations with their kids. They have the body book for boys now. You know, it's continued over the years. But even like the manners guide, right? So we have a wonderful essay about the Oops manners guide for girls. And I was so tickled when we got that pitch because something that I have never forgotten from that book is that you can eat asparagus with your fingers if it's not dripping in sauce, it's a finger food. And I don't know why that factoid from that book has never left my brain, but it was wild. It was like I read the pitch and suddenly I was like, I had that book. I learned something from that book. I can eat asparagus with my hands. Like that. It's
That
just
is
this
so
funny
funny.
guy. It's this funny kind of line of thinking, but they're like, there's a lot of that for a lot of people where if you just ask the right question, they suddenly have a memory of something where they've interacted with this brand. Or, you know, I had the little, I actually don't know what the name of the book is, and I'm sure that some listener on this podcast is going to know, but it taught you how to do miniatures like as a craft book. And
Tiny Treasures.
yes, that is exactly it. I used that to build like a diorama in high school for a book project I had to do. Like, I was like, I know how to do this because I have the Tiny Treasures book. It's like,
Oh my goodness, that little sponge cake is the thing that stands out in my mind so much.
yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And see, that there's so many touch points that you wouldn't think. And I mean, that's what happened at the presentation when I brought this out into the academic world where this book came from. Everybody had a story and it was. Everybody's comment was so unique and it felt like it was coming like totally out of left field, but I knew exactly what they were talking about.
Right?
That is so funny.
There's nothing that brings me greater joy when we hear from one of our listeners with something so hyper specific, and then we're able to track it down for them. Like Laura and I both have a massive collection of all of the AG magazines, the books, the catalogs, so many of their printed materials. And it's just somewhere in all of our brains, like different little nuggets that are locked in there forever.
I remembered something actually in the process of writing this book, like so just in the past couple of years, and very late in the process, the magazines with the paper dolls. I was obsessed with paper dolls. Anytime I could get one of them, I pretended I was just this old-fashioned Victorian child. And that's all I wanted was paper dolls. I had a bunch of them, but the American Girl ones, especially the ones that were of other real girls, were particularly imprinted in my mind. And then that left my mind. But then I applied to undergrad with a paper doll essay, and that's how I got into this like a prestigious honors program was I made what is effectively one of these paper dolls, and it didn't dawn on me because I was like, why would I have thought to do that? All of the other paper dolls in my collection as a child were fairies or they were princesses, they weren't other real people. But that is how I applied to this university, and I remember speaking to the admissions folks afterwards in this honors program, and they were like, that was the coolest thing ever. It was American Girl, right? And
Wow.
it just this the way that it embedded in my brain without me being intentional, and the way that I forgot that completely until working on this book again. I wish I still had this essay with me, but it's somewhere in the archives of University of Texas in Austin somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, it is like it's such a good idea. It's a $1 million idea for an essay like that, but it was also such a great idea for them to include that in the magazine because I think, similar to American Girl, inspiring a generation of people to be interested in history, I think it also inspired conversations about being interested in your own personal history as well. I feel like I asked my mom many more questions about her mother and like her grandmother because of reading Samantha's book series and like knowing that her grandmother was born around the same time that Samantha was alive. So I do think that like them including that sort of like I think it was like matrilineal generational storytelling through the paper doll section of the magazine was so special and unique. I'd love to see like an elementary school class do that as like a school project or
Right.
something. I think it would be fun for them.
That's a really
Definitely.
good idea. There is a great chapter in your book about how girls learn history. It's called Teaching Girls History, American Girls Curricular Standards. But there was a historian quoted in this chapter that really resonated with me, which I think I'll read the quote that Mark Spells notes. The structure of the book series of the American Girl original six book series allowed girls to compare and contrast, to consider the past, and to think about how things have or have not changed in the time since then. Something was like an aha moment to me that I might have like skipped over when I was like reading the books originally, but to have that format where the books are all in the same format and kind of have a basic framework, and then you're seeing how history has and has not changed within that, and then comparing it to your life, like really just completed something in my mind that I definitely didn't pick up when I was like 9 years old reading these books. I just thought that was like interesting. That is like just really smart of the American Girl brand to put the book series in that way.
Well, and
Yeah.
also inspire other Siri to do the same thing that, maybe we're not as quite historically accurate as American Girl, but like we it mentions, I think, the Dear America series as well.
Royal Diaries.
Royal
My daughter is
Diaries.
currently obsessed with Royal Diaries.
I
I
love
might have
Royal
to talk about them on
Diaries.
this podcast.
I'm glad you mentioned it. I was gonna say those are all at my parents' house. I've got all the Royal, not all of them, but all like a lot of the Dear America series. It was like finding a new one in a bookstore or a used bookstore was like, oh my God, this is the greatest day. Like you don't, as a kid, I wasn't online. I didn't really know how many there were in like the Royal Diary series. And then you like come across one and you're like, yes, I can read another one. I'm so excited. Like it's great. But like the format, as you're saying, like that helps you know what to look for, right? I'm like, oh,
Right.
I haven't read all the Addie books. I really want to make sure that I do. How do I get my hands on them? There's something radical in the way that it started off. And then I know that there's also like room to say that it didn't fit every character and they didn't anticipate that as the kind of created it, right? So you see this first, I think, with Kaya, where they're like, okay, there's not going to be a Christmas book. There's not going to be a
Right.
holiday book like this in the winter for this character. And then similarly with Rebecca, they did I think, a Hanukkah book for her. And it's funny, I'm thinking about this like, Passover's coming up when we're recording this. That would have probably been a more appropriate holiday to pick for the character. Hanukkah wouldn't have been as big of a deal at the turn of the century, but it is kind of fitting into this mold that they kind of backed themselves into a little bit too. So
Right.
there's definitely a
Sure.
couple of ways to think about it, which is also great. I mean, that's what I love about how every writer like approached things like this. You get to think about it more deeply and also sit back and go, gosh, this must have been such a conversation for the writers, for the people representing the brand. It's fascinating how it all came together.
And our essays
Yes.
to tackle some of that in several different essays, including the Teaching Girls History one, where they talk about this formula and alongside all of the, as Justine already pointed out, rightly deserved flack that the brand deserve has had over the years for various issues, whether it's the backstory of a particular character or these retrofitted kind of holidays, what name you, and then how how it stands up in a 2024, 2025 audience, and what girlhood means today. There was just so much thought that got put into these formulas, this way of teaching, and this essay in particular, Teaching Girls History. That is that author's specialty, is talking about how we teach younger people history. So there was lots of deliberate moves there so that we were effectively not, I don't want to say indoctrinated or made into some kind of like worldwide, nationwide cult of any kind, but we were fed these things in a very specific way so that we would retain them. And
Yes.
I think that adds to the lasting power of it all. I don't think that should scare any of us by any means, but I do think there was some deliberate efforts there.
Yes, I loved the background. I believe it was in the essay about how, we teach children history, but a background about Pleasant Rowland's own education and educator experience and her work before coming to American Girl, and also like how it is successfully woven in a different essay into how they're also selling product using this format as well. And it kind of like segues into something that I really loved about this anthology as a whole, because it really shows a lot of love to, the way that we all identified with American Girl, but it doesn't shy away at all with highlighting different critiques about the ways in which they were researching, including certain dolls' stories and how they went about writing about them, who the authors were who were hired to tell these stories. And I'm just curious, when you both sat down to gather all of these essays into one anthology series, were you looking to make sure, did you have certain perspectives in mind that you were wanting input on and wanting to include to tell a well-rounded story of American Girl?
I think I'll say this, when we opened up pitches, we got so many. So just kind of starting from there and thinking, like, before we could really even sit down and say, like, okay, I really hope someone pitches us about X, inevitably someone had. And so I think that's also really wonderful. I mean, I kind of think speaks to this desire to see this work out and in the world. And I think what you said too, I'm really glad that you did, like, every essay in this collection is coming from a place of love and admiration and also just serious engagement. Like, I think these two things can exist together, and they do. I love American Girl. I also know that there are some speed bumps along the way. It's a company. I think loving what people have taken from American Girl versus like the brand or the corporation, I think that there's a lot of room there to kind of chart your own path. I think it's like you can offer critique and you can point out where things felt like they fell short or they missed the mark, and it doesn't change loving the brand and loving what you've gained from it. So yeah,
Right.
I'm really grateful that people grappled with that because it's a difficult thing, right? It's a big, difficult topic.
Yeah, I mean, I loved reading specifically about how, because coming from me, I'm a person that did see myself represented within the early American Girl brand, but there are plenty of examples of people who contributed who did not, but it did not necessarily prevent them from loving it. In fact, it And I'm not saying like, so it's fine. It's not. But it didn't prevent them from finding ways to project identity, I think, using aspects of the American Girl brand. And I loved what you said about, your Molly doll being Jewish because you were Jewish. We had, I believe it was Marianne Lindsay who was on, and she loved Samantha, but Samantha didn't look like her. So she had her girl of today that looked a bit more like her, that she dressed in Samantha's outfits because she was like, well, I love the way Samantha dresses and whatever, but I want her to be representative of me. So I'm going to get a doll that has my skin tone and my features and have her be my Samantha. And I think that's just really awesome that there are stories of girls doing that, even though obviously we want there to be representation now that we're much further ahead in American Girls' life cycle. I do think it's really interesting that people found ways to pull meaning out that wasn't just handed to them with a doll that existed that had their exact background or a similar story to how they were identifying as a child at that time.
Yeah, we have a whole section in here, as I'm sure you all saw, part two, Who Gets to Be an American Girl, that really grapples with all the different ways that people have approached what you just mentioned in all the different ways, whether it's identity, nationality, the holidays that they celebrate, the bodies that they live in. And what I found really compelling in all of that is each of these authors had very particular critiques, and and some of it was fairly harsh and rightly so. But they didn't seek out to write an essay for our book just to cancel American Girl. They wanted to say their piece because this brand meant so much to them and still means so much to them, clearly, that writing this, I hope, was some sort of catharsis for a lot of our writers, but also, gave a space for them to talk about the ways that the brand could improve, but also still meant so much despite some of the things that it could have done better. And I think that's really powerful. No one in here came to write a damning essay necessarily, and still demonstrated the way that this brand is still important to them, important to their past, and for a lot of our writers, the present too, whether it's through their current collection of dolls, through their current work, or through the children that they are passing these dolls on to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely took that away from the essays and from the writers, even in their critiques. It wasn't to bash the brand in a way that felt exactly to your words, Casey. It wasn't trying to cancel American Girl. Like you could critique something while still appreciating its impact that it had on you. And I think that's really important to look at brands with a critical lens, and especially one that has had so much impact on so many people. But were there any unexpected insights or revelations that emerged during the creation of this book? Or did you like uncover any aspects of American Girl that surprised you?
Oh my gosh. I feel like there's a couple different directions we could probably go with this, which probably doesn't surprise you. I'm going to go with my gut. The first thing that came to mind, a few different essays talk about this, and this isn't entirely unrelated to the conversation we just had, but I had no idea how the face molds were divvied up between different dolls and when that changed. And when, like, the Rebecca doll was introduced, she had this ethnicized face mold that was being used, and that's now changed. That's a lot to unpack. And I think actually, genuinely, was interesting. I mean, I should back up and say every single essay is interesting, and I love all of them. One that I learned a lot from in particular was about Nellie O'Malley and the racialization of Irish American. I mean, it was fascinating. We are so lucky to have an essay from such a venerated scholar of Irish American identity and Irish American history. And this comes up in it, right? Like how Nellie's actual physicality is meant to convey like her class and her status. And I had no sense of this coming into that. So I learned a ton.
Yes. Oh my God. That essay, I was thinking of that essay as well, just as something when I was reading through that was so like mind blowing to me was the s subtle but very pointed realization that yes, there are like face molds for like the original dolls. And then as they came out with Josefina, she had a her own face mold that was then used for Nellie, that was then in turn used for Rebecca. And it's like, maybe something on the surface level that doesn't even, you don't really think about it. You're like, oh yeah, well, they have this like new other face mold, but it truly is like othering these additional characters that they were coming out with that weren't part of the originals. And I think that's something I hadn't really thought as deeply about previously at all.
There was so many things that I was blown away with the face mold, the connection with Girl Scouts. I didn't realize how deep that existed. I knew there was that collab that they did at some point, but wasn't sure, and loved that essay and the deep dive it took us down there with Janine that y'all spoke to previously. But I really was blown away with some of the research that I did for my essay on the food history, because I grew up with those cookbooks, and some of them were published before I think I was even reading them on my own. So they're very old. They're part of, the original canon. And they did such a good job, despite food history not necessarily being taken so seriously at that time. And they did such a good job really doing the research, finding the right people to talk about it, approximating how to recreate these historical dishes in your home as a girl who's not supposed to touch the oven and you still needed your mom's help or your parents' help. They did such a great job. Even I felt that way as a kid, and I feel that way going back to them as an adult. But what was really shocking was some of the newer cookbooks that really just forgot the mission and really kind of moved forward, not caring at all about the historical importance of any of the cooking or food history that they're sharing. And I was like, we're moving forward. This is today. We should know better. But that really informed kind of the larger evolution of the brand and kind of the priorities that have shifted. And stepping back and realizing that it wasn't just the food, of course, I shouldn't feel so slighted. That it wasn't just the things that I was looking at. It was a lot of things. But I did feel that, oh, okay, this is something that's happening throughout the space. And really, I think, is a larger indication of just how the brand is perceived by the people who make it now. Not necessarily the way that we as consumers or we as fans perceive it, but it is really interesting to know those two perspectives.
Absolutely. I love looking at the evolution of the cookbooks and cooking material that American Girl has offered up over the years as sort of part of their like descent into Mattel like owned and operated culture, because I think it's a really good lens to look at the entire brand, in the same way that like just like you mentioned, it wasn't just the cookbooks, it's also what the clothes are made out of and the quality of them and how dolls made later are kind of floppy and not as firm as the original ones. I think that that's something that's been a little bit tough for Lindsay, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way, but just as the brand has evolved over time, I think one of the things that we love about revisiting Pleasant Company era, as much as it has its cons as well as pros, but that real attention to detail of, what they were putting in all of the writing that they were putting out there and the attention to historical detail, even when they didn't get it right 100% of the time, it seemed like it was really how they were leading with a lot of the content they were creating, whereas now it seems like they're leading with more of like a sales lens than like a historical authenticity lens.
Yeah, it's different, right? It feels different. I mean, I think like I was in the American Girl place in LA like 2 weeks ago just for fun. And I was so struck by like, you can buy this Jenny's branded ice cream truck for your dolls. And I guess it's maybe it's generational, maybe it's because I'm looking at it now with an adult lens versus a kid, but there's something a little bit lost there to me to have this like real world brand kind of slapped onto a toy that you can buy for a lot of money. In my mind, I'm thinking, well, when I was a kid, if I wanted to play ice cream truck with my doll, I just kind of had to imagine it, or I would build it out of cardboard. It just wasn't available to me that way. But times change, and I don't also want to sound like an old man yells at cloud. Not my goal, but it's different.
But at the
Yeah.
same time, you have like the Pizza Hut in the Isabel and
Nikki.
yes, and they have the branded Pizza Hut AR book point pizza that you can't convey that book club, that book reading moment as a 90s kid of the 90s without the Pizza Hut personal pan pizza and the red
Right.
cups that you earn for that. And
Right.
I remember earning lots of those. And it just wouldn't land, right? It just wouldn't land if it wasn't Pizza Hut. So there's this really interesting thing that they're doing with brands. Obviously, Jenny's and Pizza Hut are not on the same wavelength at all. And I think Pizza Hut still exists, right? Like,
Yes.
it's still a thing. But it's not Jenny's, right? It's not the same kind of thing at all. And yeah, it is really interesting to see how they're still incorporating all different kinds of brands, but some of them land in very specific historical ways and others don't necessarily, or they don't seem to.
The 90s is history now.
Oh,
Right.
right.
Yeah, truly. We have a great essay on consumerism, and even just like it touched upon the 1986 doll Courtney
Yes.
and the meta-ness of it all, with Courtney having an American Girl doll herself,
Yes, she's a Molly fan like me.
having a Molly, and the different brands that were incorporated into her collection. Just really mind-boggling to think about. But like, I wonder now if like American Girl has kind of lost the plot a little bit, and if the girls of today are not going to have the same cultural impact like 30 years down the line, if it's not seeping into every aspect of their childhood like it was for us with learning about history, because I think the historical aspect is less and less the focus of the brand. Just all of these different ways that we were consuming American Girl. If girls today or girls in the future are getting a watered down version of this, perhaps, like what that cultural impact would be for them versus for us growing up in a time of, I don't know, we like to call it the golden era of AG. But yeah, it's interesting to think about.
When they brought back the original lineup, right, and the kind of this moment on social media, I believe what I'm thinking about is during the pandemic, like, hey, everyone's back at their parents' house. What if we brought back all our original girls? And like, people were wild for it. I mean, when you don't have something for a while and now you have disposable income, that's awesome. Like, I have to imagine there will always be kids like me and probably like us on this podcast, all of us sitting here. I loved like reading about Kit struggling through the Great Depression. I didn't think it would be as relevant as it feels right now. We would be back to this moment.
Oh,
But
truly.
I loved playing with stuff that felt kind of stuffy and historical and wasn't interesting to everybody. I didn't
Yeah.
mind Molly was growing up in the World War II era. Like, I was fascinated by that. I thought that was really cool. It is interesting to imagine that like you couldn't tell the story of the 80s in America without recognizable brands. Like, that also is like a cultural shift that was real. And so
Yep.
it's like, how do you grapple with that and like make that cohesive? But I think in order for it to work, I think you do have to have a little bit of distance in any direction. And so I think for me, what's jarring is just seeing the speed and clip at which like special stuff or special collabs will come out and kind of, it's like a fast fashion type of deal, right? It like they throw it out there and then it doesn't last very long. And there's that kind of sense of it's just jarring because it's happening quickly, I guess, to me. But I don't know. Casey, what do you think?
I think about what kind of doll could be made. Obviously, like, they need to, if they're moving forward, they made the 90s, are they going to do the aughts next? And so on and so forth. But I really think, and we always think, well, the history we're living now is not that historic. It doesn't feel like, because we're not in it, or we're living it rather than looking backwards. And so there's that element, and there's also the element of, we can't compare it to things like world wars and depressions, but we are living in fairly unprecedented times. And, there is something to say for that. So I like to speculate wildly and think of what kind of doll might be made for the 2020s, like some my kids' age, 9 years old in 2025. What kind of doll would that be? Maybe this is a thinking project I should give my kid and see what comes up out of it. But I think so much about my kids not on Instagram, but a few years older and they might be. And I think about how them having like unfettered access to Helicity Merriman or Click Clitteridge. And like, this is American Girl, and not having any of the background that we have. And that's the way that I look for it. And I'm okay with the speed at which things are changing because I'm excited to get to that doll. I want the two women who run Helicity Merriman to be turned into dolls. And I want their backstory, and then I want the story of what they're doing now, which is really cool stuff. So that's kind of where my mind, I like try to grapple with the, as Justine talked about, the consumerism and the rapidness of it all. I guess my silver lining in it is that I am like, okay, then that means there is still room for a Helicity Merriman doll branded. And you know what? I think I'd pay for that one. I think I'd pay a lot of money for that doll, but it needs to have that name. And it needs to be a like an American Girl After Dark situation.
American Girl After Dark. I love that, Casey.
What's interesting about, I think, the anthology and like these meme accounts and the kind of resurgence of American Girl doll and American Girl for folks in their mid-20s and older, there's a lot of really fun, subversive, snarky stuff happening online that like the brand is benefiting from but cannot engage with directly, right? Like, there's, it's really funny to read articles about people going to the American Girl Doll Cafe and being like, I can order mimosas now. Let's go get drunk and eat meat. But of course, the brand is for children still. There's that kind of tension there that you can't kind of directly engage with like head on. So it's fascinating. That's just another way that like we're now coming back to the brand and kind of making it our own, but in a way that's just a little bit too distant, right, from what the original intention is. Yeah, it's fascinating.
I think what we're all saying is that American Girl needs a Finsta, an official Finsta. Under 18, do not interact. But it needs because I think it would actually. I think what people our age or non-children engaging with the brand are reaching out, like looking for the brands to sort of meet us where they're at, and they can only do that in so many ways while keeping all their content like kid friendly. It's almost like watching a kid's movie as an adult and being like, oh, they slipped in some jokes for the parents into this movie.
Oh my God, that's so true, Laura.
But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle dealing with this resurgence as they cover the years that this resurgence has been under going forward. And I'm excited to see what they do because I do think they have done a good job of, where they can recognizing some of the momentum and bringing back some of the things that people really resonate with. And I have to imagine there's somebody at American Girl who part of their job is to like lurk around on social media and see what's happening.
Well, we did reach out to them and say that we're doing this book, just FYI. I think we had a couple questions for them at some point. I don't remember exactly what the bulk of it, this was largely before we had the various essays together, but we did say, this is what we're doing. This is roughly the approach. We have this press, we're legit and you have nothing to fear. And then maybe a few questions that we had, and they very politely declined. I can't remember exactly who this was, but it was somebody on the marketing, the PR side, whose job could very well have been, to troll the internet and look for these kinds of things. So someone at American Girl knows this is happening. So my thought is there, someone is going to read this book in within the larger American Girl universe. And there's actually an American Girl archivist. There is someone who's in charge of doing this. I applied for this position during the pandemic, actually, but I didn't want to move. Yeah, it's a really cool position. You'd work for Mattel. I think it was in Minnesota or wherever they're based. I can't remember. Somewhere in the Midwest. And I didn't want to relocate, but it's a really cool position. The woman who has it is a really cool person. So, this is the kind of thing that she might pick up, but could never write for, of course, I'm sure, because of NDAs and all sorts of other things. But we're people, I think they know about all these. And
They know.
maybe they're trying to be clever about it. Maybe they're finding a way. And if they are clever, they'll find a way to take our money using all these things that we want to see, because that's what they've done so far. So take my money, Mattel.
I think more so than like American Girl now and Mattel, I just want Pleasant to be in the background, proud of all of the community surrounding American Girl and the incredible brand that she created, and all of the original authors and illustrators, some of whom like we're in touch with and interact with, and they are like very much a part of this community as well and acknowledge it, even though if they're no longer that close to the brand, like those original members are aware. And I think that is really full circle and really beautiful to see like what the community has formed into and still have their visibility into it.
And all the women too, women and other marginalized groups in the academy, in the space of like writing for others for public consumption, public history, all the people that she pretty much had a hand in making sure got to those spaces, whether it was being given this information and shown you can do these things by looking at the mastheads of the books, showing that other women did the research for these books, or learning about these young girls doing these really cool things in their parts of history and then going on and wanting to learn more about that. That has to feel really powerful, knowing that, the Felicity generation is real. Like, we know that. And for her to have some role in that has to feel really good.
Absolutely agreed.
Well, this is a really great segue to a question that we asked to all of our podcast guests, but I think we're going to shift it, especially for you two and the honor it's been to have you join us with the launch of your book. What do you hope readers take away from the anthology?
I would say that I think that if folks have a sense of joy and wonder. I know that sounds a little trite, but truly, reading it, I hope that they have as much fun with it as we did soliciting these essays, working on them, editing them. I mean, a lot of them are heavy subjects, but the process of doing this, I think, has been such a joy, and I hope that is conveyed through the text. I really do.
I hope readers take away that there is a giant community of like-minded folks out there, especially for anyone who's maybe not found that community. And whether that's, you're a doll collector, you got that section of the community, you're someone who wants to make these memes, or you're someone who wants to go to the American Girl doll and get mimosas now. Any version of it, I think there's a space for, to also sound very trite, there is a space for everyone in this very large community. And I think that importantly, and we've talked about that through the book, it does include boys now. It includes non-binary folks. It includes people that never had a doll that looked like them, or maybe did, those dolls came out when they were much older, she said very sadly. So I think that would be my main takeaway, is that there's a space for everyone there.
Definitely.
Absolutely. I love that. And I think you guys really did such a wonderful job including so many different perspectives from different races to how American Girl has handled representations of disabilities to queer culture, like retroactively being applied to American Girl. It's just there truly is something for everybody to identify with. And I almost encourage our listeners or anybody listening who maybe hasn't engaged on a super deep level with American Girl, maybe you're just enjoying like the memes and whatever, to tap in and see if any of these really resonate with you. Because every single one I was reading, I was just like, pow, mind blown. And so I'm so grateful that you guys put this wonderful collection together and contributed to yourselves as well. But it's just almost like covers, and I know you said like if there was more you could include, you would in volume two, hopefully coming at some point. But it covers everything and more that I think we could have hoped for.
That's really
I
sweet here.
That was beautifully said, Laura. And yeah, echoing everything, and just I think there really is something for I think everyone in the community, whether you are fully entrenched, an avid collector currently, or someone who hasn't thought about the brand in many years and is just maybe getting back into it. This book has really been so interesting. And like, I learned so many new things throughout the way. And I feel so inspired by American Girl 2 now, and just the ways to engage with the brand. I'm about to go read some fanfic after this. Maybe. I'm like, I was really, I'm like, all
Archive
of
of our own mentioned. I couldn't
my.
believe it.
I was gonna say, believe it, folks. If you're interested in Archive of Our Own and fan fiction, there is an essay for you in this book.
Oh my God, there's just endless ways to interact with American Girl, and it doesn't stop in childhood, and it doesn't stop after, you put your dolls away. And it's just such a testament to the lasting impact that it's had on all of us, and it really unites us all together, and that's a beautiful thing.
Oh, thank you.
Well, let's shift gears here a little bit and continue the fun. We'd love to play a little game with you today. And Casey, let's start with you. If you were an American Girl doll, what three accessories would you come with?
Let's see. The accessories are my favorite part, so it feels really horrible to only pick three, I'll be honest.
It's hard.
I think I would have a Topo Chico, which is my favorite drink, but I always have three drinks. So if I can combine it and have like three drinking vessels, like a coffee cup that's also somehow like soldered to like a water bottle and then also a seltzer, to me, like the trio of drinks that I feel every millennial woman has on their desk at all times. So the
Yes.
trio of drinks, one of which is the Topo Chico, which is a seltzer for anyone unfamiliar with the brand. I think I'd also have, I always carry a handkerchief, which is something my mom always did. And I always felt that was very like classy and vintage.
Yeah.
And I either wear it or it's attached to like a bag charm type thing. So I'd have some kind of cool bandana handkerchief thing.
That's
And
lovely. That's
then,
very American Girl.
thank you. Thank you. I like that. And then lastly, I think I'd have like one of those tiny books that it's got like the word recipes on the front, and it has like actual lines that you could use like a tiny pencil and write your recipes in. Because in real life, I always carry around a book, and anytime someone tells me about something, like, write down your recipe for me. I want to know its history and tell me who told it to you. But it'd be one of those teeny tiny ones. And so you'd have to write in it with a tiny pencil, and it was just, squiggles, like pretend cursive. That's
Love that.
I love
That
that
is
so much.
amazing. Oh my gosh. The trio of beverages is so relatable, especially. I think that there's a Topo Chico collab that could potentially be coming to American Girl's future with that.
I would buy that for
Right?
a
Oh my God,
fact.
that is hilarious. Justine, what about you? What three accessories would you come with if you were an American Girl doll?
Okay, I've had some time to think about this while Casey was giving her excellent answer. I would say pain au chocolat, like a little pastry, delicious. I have never successfully made one, but I love to eat them. So let's throw that in there. If we can count both of my cats as one accessory item. Much like Rebecca, I have two adorable little cats. And I had coconut, I'll say that for the record, but I would have loved a
Ooh.
cat, option when I was a kid. The first pet was coconut. And then I would say probably a little stamp book. I am a big believer in snail mail and epistolary correspondence. So you gotta have stamps to mail and also support the USPS. Things are dire.
Absolutely. I love all that. Incredible. I feel like every single person, well, I know Lindsay, you would definitely have your cat now included in your accessories as well. It's like they just didn't nail the cats right away in the accessory department with
Oh my
American
God,
Girl.
there's some cats.
Oh my gosh. Well, this has been so lovely and wonderful. Truly feel like we could speak to you both about American Girl for hours and hours on end. We've so enjoyed getting to learn more about both of you, but also about all the meaning and thought put into this wonderful book. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, thank you for
Thank
having
you.
us.
It's been such an honor. Now, where could everybody find you after this, and where could they get your book?
Oh my goodness. Well, we have a book account shared between us. It's at an American Girl Anthology on Instagram. But we each have our own little Insta handles. It feels so silly to say this out loud, but I will. It's at Justine O D A S H S. I have a hyphenated last name. I feel the need to explain this because a lot of folks ask me about this. It's Justine O dash S.
Oh, cute.
Like audacious. I have no idea what that means. And I was like, well, fair enough. I'll explain it. Published by the University Press of Mississippi. You can buy our book at any major retailer. Please choose your favorite local indie bookstore.
I think we're going to have a few stops on a book tour, very few, and but we'll post all of those on our Instagram as well. You can find me at Casey Highsmith, HYSMITH. But we'll post everything there as we are rapidly figuring out what else about it to plan. And yeah, let us know if you want to hear more about American Girl.
And we all do, because who doesn't?
Thank
Well, thank you both so much for joining us, and thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for listening to American Girl Women. For more AG Women content, follow us on IG at American Girl Women or send us your American Girl stories via AmericanGirlWomen@gmail.com. We might just read them on the pod. If you like this podcast, tell your friends and rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts.